where Shelton comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
September is a month in which we are being asked to become aware of the kind of gynecological cancers that affect women, such as ovarian and uterine, cervical. Joining us now is a woman who is a true leader when it comes to women's health. Kylie Zagger is the chief operating officer of the company called Aspira Women's Health. She has 20 years in the healthcare industry herself. She is the co-founder of a non-for-profit called MAT, named in honor of her own mom, Marilyn Ann Trahan. This is a foundation that originally began in Greenwich, Connecticut, focused on early detection of breast and ovarian cancer. And it has a very special mission, which we're going to hear about in just a moment. She is a warrior for women and children's health and well-being and a very close personal friend. Kylie Zagger, hello, and welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much, Lisa.
So, Kylie, I want to begin by asking you to explain the mission of MAT. What was the mission of MAT? How did it differentiate itself from so many other nonprofits in the space?
Absolutely. So Dr. Elena Ratner and I met. She is the head of GYN oncology at Yale Hospital in New Haven. And we identified a serious problem in some of the women's health and cancer areas. In that early detection is something that has not been focused on. And it is leading really to these diseases becoming unacceptably deadly. So this is the fourth pillar that most nonprofits are not focused on, where early detection is at the core of what we're looking at. So with ovarian cancer in particular, signs and symptoms represent themselves in the non-oncologic providers, urology, GI, chiropractor, dermatology, internist. And the typical ovarian cancer patient has seen 6 to 8 physicians over the course of 18 to 24 months prior to diagnosis, where precious time is lost. So our foundation was constructed by putting together a curriculum that is put in place to enable the non-oncologic providers to learn about breast, ovarian cancer, genetics, family history, and how to get in front of these diseases and identify them if they do have a patient, come into their office in order to save this woman time and hopefully be able to diagnose the diseases at a much earlier stage, which is critical with ovarian cancer.
You know, it's interesting. We're chatting with Kylie Zagger, 203-333-9422. If you want to give a comment or a question, we're talking about ovarian, uterine cancers and cancers affecting women that are silent. I was reading the autobiography of Gene Wilder, who, you know, lived in Stamford for many years and was married to the beloved Gilda Radner. And she died at the age of 44 from ovarian cancer, but not until, in other words, she had been to 6 doctors also and complained of all kind of symptoms. And that, you know what they told her, Kylie? They told her it was in her head. They told her it was psychosomatic. They told her it was bad digestion. And finally, when they resulted in ovarian cancer, she was in stage 4. And Gene Wilder writes, she should have been in stage 3. It should have been detected
Absolutely.
Sooner. And he felt that by promoting CA-125 after she died, that he had contributed at least to the basic awareness and screening. What is CA-125? That's the only tool I've ever really heard about for ovarian cancer.
CA-125 is a blood test that measures, in essence, highly active cancer cells or highly active cells. It is not a good detection for ovarian cancer, but it is all that we have. And unfortunately, in the last 40 years, we've seen very little progression on the early detection front of things, which really needs to be where the focus is. 4 out of 5 women, to Gene Wilder's point, are diagnosed with ovarian cancer in late stage. But this is known as the disease that is whispering, but it absolutely is not whispering. It is speaking to us. And truthfully, we're just not either listening or we're ill-equipped to be able to listen because all of the signs and symptoms are very vague. They are livable. They are easily put off by most women, which we're all guilty of doing, and saying, oh, it's just minor back pain, or, you know, I'm not feeling great. And as a mother or as a worker or a wife or a friend, all of us are so guilty of putting ourselves second, third, fourth, and not paying attention to those things because they're not debilitating until it's too late. But the most important thing to remember about ovarian cancer is that early detection is the key. In stage one, the five-year relative survival rate is 90%, which is the same as breast cancer. And as the disease progresses, which happens with time, in stage three, you have a 39% chance of five-year survival, and in stage four, only 17%. But the problem statement we have with this disease is that most of the cancers are diagnosed late stage. As I mentioned, four out of five are diagnosed with late stage. Another problem that we have with CA125 is the non-white population is much more difficult to detect. CA125 was constructed and tested with Caucasian population. So we very much struggle to detect ovarian cancer inside of ethnic populations. And another issue that we really have is that 1 in 40 Ashkenazi Jewish women are at increased risk. So it's a very, very important disease that we understand all of the factors of this. We understand the importance of getting in front of this. We understand our genetics, our family history, and us as women or us as friends or husbands, we never allow a woman to dismiss benign signs and symptoms, because it very much could mean something if the puzzle comes together and is constructed in the fashion that maybe there is a risk for ovarian cancer.
So we're chatting with Kylie Zagger, 203-333-9422. So explain to me that if we go in for an annual physical, and in other words, how is it that we're supposed to know if we've got something brewing in stage one? What are our physicians supposed to be doing for us, ideally, that you would like to see them doing right now that they're not doing?
So actually, you know, for purposes of our conversation, I would actually say it's not the physicians. It's really the woman, and it's the friends of the woman and the husband of the woman. It is about us very much wrapping our arms around the fact that these very vague signs and symptoms can mean something, coupled with knowing your family history is very important. Understanding that there is a sharp correlation to breast and ovarian cancer. There is a modest correlation to melanoma and ovarian cancer, pancreatic cancer and ovarian cancer, colon cancer and ovarian cancer. So understanding your history, understanding your genetic makeup, very, very important. And then understanding the risks associated with your descent. For instance, I mentioned that 1 in 40 Ashkenazi Jewish women are at an increased risk. So as you put all of these pieces together and you go into the doctor's office, I would say it's the responsibility of the woman to be the advocate for herself, that if there is a family history, if you are of a specific descent, and if you are not feeling 100% right, and I can go through what those signs and symptoms might look like that need to be consistently present for about 12 days. It is very important that you advocate for yourself and you don't stop until you have an answer.
So what are some of those signs and symptoms? And you say they need to be present for about 12 days on average consecutively?
That's correct.
All right, so what are some of them? We're chatting with Kylie Zagger.
So some of those, and they don't have to all be there. It can be one of these that would raise a flag that you would want to talk to your doctor about it. Frequent urination, which at times would lead you to the urologist's office. Difficulty eating or feeling very full after a meal, which naturally would potentially lead you to your GI physician. Lower back pain, which at times can present to the chiropractor. Sometimes there is a rash across the abdomen, which can put you into the dermatologist's office. And many women end up with the internist because of the amount of fatigue or fluctuations in weight, whether that's gain or loss. But if any of those signs or symptoms are present for 12 or more days, and there is a family history, and you are of an ethnicity that is potentially at increased risk, this is something that I would not stop until I absolutely understood what was going on with my body.
And what is Kylie Sagra? What is the test for ovarian cancer? Is it a screening of your ovaries? Is it an ultrasound? Is it an X-ray? I mean, how do you know if you've got something going on?
So there is no good early detection tools right now, which is why I've been, very committed. Dr. Ratner and I have been very committed to trying to figure out the early detection path and being involved with organizations that potentially can make a big difference here. But right now, a transvaginal ultrasound is very important. And one of the things that I would say is critical that you have so that you can have a visual image of the ovaries and of the size of the ovaries. Also, there is a manual exam process where the physician can feel the ovaries by going internal and depressing on your abdomen as well. And if there is some sort of concern, they will naturally run a CA125 blood test, but be well aware that there are issues with that at times. So if there is a pelvic mass and you've actually progressed to having a pelvic mass, whether benign or potentially malignant. Aspira Women's Health is actively working on a suite of products and has a few on the market right now that are able to really assist in identifying the risk associated with pelvic mass. So right now, OVA1 Plus is a test that if you have a pelvic mass, you can understand whether or not you really need to be in the hands of a GYN oncologist and that this mass potentially is at risk. And soon we're going to be coming forward with a blood test that will be able to help understand the benign masses, and that's called OvaWatch. So very excited about some of this work, but it still isn't enough. We have a lot of work to do in the industry to be able to get ourselves to an early detection platform, which is really essential.
You know what I'm really asking, Kylie Sagra? This is what I really want to know. And I don't know if you know the answer, but this is what I want to know. If you're stage one, does that mean you have a mass? Or is it something else going on within the ovary that doesn't look like a mass but could still be stage one cancer? That's what I'm asking. I'm a non-doctor, and that's what I want to know.
So everyone's bodies present differently. There is a thought that ovarian cancer begins in the fallopian tubes and that in stage one there might not be a mass. For some women, there is a mass in stage one, but the biology presents very differently depending on the woman's body and makeup. And that is what makes this so challenging, is there is no way to, really understand if there is a mass, is this a risk, and what stage is this. So putting this puzzle together is very important because there's a good chance that you are in stage one or in stage two where you might not have a mass that is identifiable. But if you have the signs and symptoms, and you have constructed family history, that is a time that I would get a genetics panel done potentially, and I would make sure that you are moving your way to a GYN oncologist as fast as possible and make sure you've got the right team in place to be able to help identify this disease as early as possible. So I know, Lisa, it's not a great answer, but unfortunately it is where we are with this disease, which is the reason it is unacceptably deadly and the fourth cause of cancer deaths.
This is very interesting to me. So what you're saying is this is new news to me. I love when guests come on my show and teach me something. So what you're saying to me is ovarian cancer is so it's so insidious that you could have it, but you might not have a tumor on your ovary. That's incredible. That's new news to me. And Kylie, let me just have you give us all a little bit of a conversation about why you personally are so passionate about this foundation that you began was named after your mom. Just tell us a little bit about your mother, your beautiful Marilyn.
Oh, so she's incredible, full of energy, full of life, and one of those spirits that you wish were just present forever, such a ray of sunshine in everyone's lives. But at the age of 38, she started with these modest signs and symptoms and worked in a hospital, and there were thoughts around being a overworked, tired mother of two, and it was very much dismissed. But we noticed the tiny pouch that was starting in her belly. We noticed the weight gain. She got very full after eating. She had a lot of lower back pain. So all of the symptoms that we've talked about, but it, you know, even amongst her medical colleagues, were very much dismissed as you need to take it easy and, you know, try to find some time for yourself and a bit of, you know, rest and relaxation. And fast forward to 40 years old, and I'll never forget it, the morning that she drove us to school, because she only worked during the time that we were in school, and never returned. And one of our neighbors picked us up from school that day, drove us to the hospital, and instead of taking a right-hand turn down the radiology floor, we went down into the patient wing and, you know, walked into the hospital room with my mother looking as though she was 9 months pregnant. And, you know, now that I've been in healthcare for 20 years, you know, the first thing that would have come to my mind is bowel obstruction, what has caused all this ascites. But she was crying and she told us the story and said, I came into the hospital and they thought maybe I was pregnant. And we went to ultrasound and I had a tumor the size of a grapefruit on my left ovary, the same on my right, one that looked like a mini football on my spleen. And it was stage 4 advanced ovarian cancer with a very grim prognosis. So she was an incredible warrior. And we got 6 years out of her. I would say 3 were decent. The other 3 were very challenging. And we lost my mother at the young age of 46 to ovarian cancer. Subsequent to that, my father's sister also passed away in her early 40s with ovarian cancer. And now, unfortunately, it's making its way into my generation. My dad's sister's children are now heavily affected by it. The issue that we have is, you know, for us, there is no genetic mutation. So this is a much more complex story. We are not Jewish descent. We don't have anything to, you know, to hold our head on here. But Elena Ratner and I made the decision years ago that it was very important to remove my fallopian tubes because we felt that if the hypothesis that ovarian cancer potentially begins in the fallopian tubes, that that was at least going to take a step in the right direction until we were ready to remove my ovaries. Because once you remove ovaries, it surgically induces you into menopause, which can create, you know, other complications such as cardiovascular issues or bone health issues. So you want to hang on to those ovaries as long as possible, but you definitely don't want to risk ovarian cancer. So we took the first step in removing my fallopian tubes. But it was tragic, 1999, and the most unfortunate part of the story is nothing has changed in early detection since those days. So it's a big mission and a big moment in time where we're very focused on what we need to do to educate the broader population. And I'll still say women, you know, need to be the advocates and need to be the warriors for their own health. And we are so quick to put ourselves last. But at the end of the day, losing my mother was the most devastating thing that has ever happened in my life. So I would encourage every mother out there to make sure you don't put yourself last. It's very important that if you sense things inside of your body that you're advocating for that answer so you can be here for your family.
Kylie Zagger, thank you very much for coming on the show and sharing your story and your passion. I think that you have made a real impact on me and our audience today. And thank you for that. And, I wish that we were further ahead in all of this, but I'm so encouraged and heartened by someone like you who cares so much about this. I think that you're going to make a real difference in the world for millions of other women, and I thank you for that.
Godspeed. Thank you so much, Lisa. It was a pleasure to be with you today, and you know, we'll keep fighting the good fight. Thank you so much.
Kylie Zagger of Aspire Women's Health on the Lisa Wexler Show. We'll be right back.